Thank you for joining us at UInc. My name is Rhea Greif, and I'm here with you today, as I am every week, to help build the most important brand in your life, which is you. When we talk about building, we use tools, and the same goes for building our brand. These tools will help elevate your emotional intelligence and help to lead you in a more positive, successful direction in life and in business. Some of these tools you will find helpful today, and some you'll stow away on a shelf until another time, depending on when you will need to utilize it. This week's tool is gaining access, and why it is important to have the ability to get access to resources to face life's challenges and be able to solve problems effectively and efficiently and creatively. Being able to discover access points is what I will demonstrate to you that is a great tool for your brand. Hey, let's get it now. Start to understand exactly what we mean by access. And how I am going to do that is through my 20-year experience as a social worker. A social worker goes about the business of discovering what is available for their client and how to access it. Sometimes this means making phone calls. Sometimes this means surfing the web. Sometimes this means showing up at events. Sometimes this means doing research with books at the library. Sometimes this means attending a seminar. Sometimes this means just looking around you as you walk around your neighborhood. And sometimes this means meeting with a potential investor. The resources are there. You just have to access them. Why then do people need to even have a social worker at all? Well, there are obstacles that a social worker has been trained to overcome. One obstacle would be that you don't know that all of this exists. Another obstacle is that you don't even know if you qualify. Furthermore, you can't imagine even that there would be some entity out there offering such things either out of the sense of unworthiness, or your life experiences have shown you that no one cares, or you are so battered by stress that you can't think creatively, or you are conditioned to just go through the motions, or you are simply spending your days putting out one fire after another. In my experience, it is a combination of all of these, but even more so, it is a lack of investment of time to gain this access. You can and have to be your own social worker. Do not continue on a path of willful ignorance. From your health team, to your food choices, to financial assistances, grants, supplemental programs, community supports and opportunities, neighborhood events, it is up to you to be your own best advocate and find the access point for the betterment of your brand. A great book to help you get going is Directed by Purpose by Michael Stewicki. In Directed by Purpose, he explains how all of us can discover a meaning, a purpose, or access to life. This purpose will then guide us towards achievement and fulfillment if we follow it, much like a social worker's purpose is for the well-being of their client. You can go to any university website or board that certifies social workers to find out more about what that role entails, but here is a short list to get you going as to what you can do. Identify and assess areas of need, strengths, and support networks to achieve goals. I recommend using the asset model, also known as the ABCD model, and you can find the links to the books and the articles referenced on our show on wcbe.org/programs/u-inc. Or you can find us on SoundCloud or iTunes for a podcast of this episode of You Inc. Develop plans to improve well-being and write them out and put them on the calendar. Research community resources and government agencies to apply for and receive benefits, and advocate for and help yourself get resources. But I'm going to make a shift here in order for us to gain access in a more immediate, tangible way. In the book, Explore Everything, Place Hacking the City by Bradley Garrett, we see a different kind of access, which I feel is a great way to start. It is assumed that every inch of the world has been explored and charted, that there is nowhere new to go, but perhaps it is the everyday places around us, the cities we live in, that need to be rediscovered. The feeling of finding access to the city's edge, to explore its forgotten tunnels, scale unfinished skyscrapers high above the metropolis, abandoned buildings, untended farmland, closed down malls, or sit in the underbelly of a bridge like my brother used to do with a friend, just dangling above the earth watching films, can be liberating, empowering, and facing fears all at once in order to come to the realization that there is plenty more out there for us. Evade your comfort zone by leaving urban, suburban, and rural security in order to experience the environs in ways beyond the boundaries of conventional life. It is called place hacking and the recoding of closed, secret, hidden, and forgotten spaces to make them realms of opportunity both in your physical environment and, as a consequence, your mental environment. Exploration is a thrilling, mind-expanding hobby that encourages our natural instincts to explore and play in our own environment. A place hack that leads to a life hack, if you will. I do caution all of you that there's danger involved, but through training, recruiting, preparation, equipping, social engineering, you can have the experiences of a lifetime, which will create a radical shift in how you view accessibility to the world at large. Nothing is off limits. Use this as a manifesto, combining philosophy, politics, and adventure, and your right to access the world around you. Access trumps ownership. That is a quote by Lisa Gansky, an international thought leader, writer, and speaker on the topic of the sharing economy, open innovation, and entrepreneurship. Dave Rinaldo is originally from the east side of Cleveland and now calls Columbus his home. His profession as an internet entrepreneur has led him to implement solutions enabling more transparency, collaborations, and efficiencies at Fortune 500 and early stage companies across five different industries, including auto, healthcare, financial services, and even hair salons. His current venture, Azotti.com, enables commercial food buyers like Aramark, Sodexo, Target, Albertsons to reduce food waste by sourcing from hyper-local farms. Dave has a deep passion for writing, philosophy, Buddhism, meditation, economics, neuroscience, and has traveled extensively around the world, mostly Europe, the Arctic Circle, North Africa, East Asia, Central America, Australia, and New Zealand. And in his spare time, you can find him swimming around in a quarry on a unicorn. Welcome, Dave.
Thanks, Rhea. That is true. It is all true.
So, Dave, my first question is, there's a South Korean version of Saving Private Ryan?
Yes. Okay. Yes. And remember, I brought that up with you as we were talking about gaining access.
Right.
So, you know, and actually, before we dive down the access path, you know, you really, I was listening to your opening comments and you talked about, you know, you need to be your own social worker, right? In order to gain access in there to any place, right? You need to understand yourself. And, you know, for me personally, I remember I've gone on this journey. You know, you're always going on this journey, but, you know, you need to know thyself, right? Definitely. That is no question. And you need to have an impartial counselor, someone like yourself,
right?
Guiding you down this path, who can sort of help you see things clearly, and don't be scared to face the scariest insecurities of your life, because that will build strength. And then I think the next thing in order to gain access to some really unusual and uplifting environments is empathy. You have to understand where people are coming from, and in order to gain empathy, which you can practice on your own, you need curiosity and an imagination. And then the third thing I think that really sort of grounds you and allows you to speak with anybody, right? Because to gain access, that means you're generally going to be asking for something, is to have principles. Now, you don't need a lot of principles, and they should be universal, right? They should be logically consistent, and they should be able to be proven, right? Mm-hmm. So it's more of the philosophical approach to principles. For instance, one of my principles is I will not initiate fraud. I will not coerce with violence other people. Even if I'm being ordered to, I will not do that.
Okay.
All right. Now, if there's a self-defense situation and, you know, you're under questioning by the Nazis or whatever, yeah, you can lie to the Nazis.
Okay.
But in general, you need to have these principles, because these principles, you need to stand firm, because people, as you gain access and you gain exposure to power, fame, money, right? You know, if you don't have principles, they can guide you down a real real scary could lead to a gutter stop on the way.
Sure.
So once you understand yourself, then that allows you to be your best self. And I've listened to some of your past podcasts and shows. And if you don't know who you are and you don't love yourself, then how are other people going to love you?
Right.
Right. So let's take it full circle now to Korea. This is 2003. And at the time, I was about 28 years old. And I was on about a 2-year journey around the world where I followed the season of summer. And at this point, I was in Korea.
I love that, following the season of summer.
Yeah, my tan was perfect. Okay. I didn't need lotion. There is like a perfect equilibrium of skin.
It's good,
it's
to
amazing.
Know.
So I was in a bar in a Korean town where I was going hiking, right, into these big mountains, a lot of hiking in Korea. And there were no Roman characters or any of the signs. So it was all symbols. I didn't speak Korean. And I was like, well, where do you go? Well, you go to the bar. All right. So I went into the bar and I was hanging out, and there was two other guys in there. They were close to my age. And next thing you know, they spoke a little bit of English, had some American education, and we started talking. But more when you speak at that level, you're like a third grade level.
Mm-hmm.
So you really have to bring, you know, knock-knock jokes, Chris Farley falling down humor.
Sure.
A lot of nonverbal connecting. Mm-hmm. Shots also help.
Sure, yes. Right? Alcohol is a social lubricant.
And I remember one of the producers, who didn't speak very good English, he said I reminded him of a dolphin. And I didn't know what he meant, but basically he said a happy-go-lucky creature.
Nice.
That he wanted to show me something of what he does. Well, it turns out that he was a movie producer.
Wow.
On the version of Saving Private Ryan in Korea. And so he said, we're gonna fake that you are a Washington Post journalist. And we're going to get you on the bus, and you're going to bring a notepad around. You can interview whoever you want, and we're going to introduce you to the quote-unquote Steven Spielberg of Korea.
Love
and
it.
China, and then also to the Johnny Depp of Korea. And he was a handsome man, actually, when I did meet him. So we go on this bus. It was a 6-hour trip up to the mountain. I met him out the next day. We go up to the mountain, and now there's about 100 guys, maybe 5 women on this whole set.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never been on a movie set before, but they are really boring.
Okay.
I don't know if you've ever been.
Yes, I have. Take after take after take.
You're
after
just
take.
Watching, and there's a lot of minutia, right. And people, you know, stealing stuff. Who knows what the heck's going on? So we're hanging out, and I'm doing some interviews, talking with people, and I didn't realize we're going to be there all night.
Mm-hmm.
They had the explosions. I got to see the grenades and people shooting each other. I got to meet everybody and took down some fake notes, typed them in my blog. But never a Washington Post.
Mm-hmm.
So I gain access to this. Oh, and then actually the whole thing finished up because it was 6 in the morning when it ended. The Johnny Depp thought I was funny. He and the producers took me back, and we ended up having another 5-hour drinking fest.
Wow.
In his apartment. And it was me and probably like 10 Korean guys having what I guess I could best call third grade locker room talk. So that was the best. And then we had breakfast, and it was one of those great experiences, you know, of my life.
Tell us about the access you had to your food awakening. Mm. I had read about how the tomato that you had, the garden tomato versus the supermarket tomato when you were 10. And with so many folks stuck in a very unhealthy relationship with food, how can they gain access to their food awakening?
So my food awakening, as Rhea was alluding to, was when I was about 10 years old. I grew up in an Italian household, and we had Victory Gardens. And my grandma, I was an incredible cook, of course, Italian grandma. She would do the Pepsi challenge, but with a tomato from the store and one from the garden.
Mm.
And I would taste one from the store, like taste like a tomato. I tasted one from the garden. I'd be like, oh my gosh, that tastes like a fruit.
Right.
And my grandma would be like, Dave, a tomato is a fruit. I'm like, oh, okay, thanks. Thanks, grandma. So that was so I've always sort of had this awakening of what real food tastes like. And then I'm just being curious and empathetic. I started seeing all these, you know, these horrible documentaries, Food Inc., which will scare you straight. There's ones less severe,
meat
like Sustainable. Yeah.
That's, you know, another one.
Yeah, your Wheat Belly. We could go on and on.
Yeah.
But you can watch any one of those. But I think watching one of those and then actually trying, go to the farmer's market and try some freshly picked product from a farmer who puts blood, sweat, and tears in it. You know, and just as my grandma would put TLC into her meals and they would taste a difference. And there was a difference between my grandma's meal, who spent all day in it, versus my mom cooking the same exact recipe, but she went out on it with a very hurried sense. Well, the farmers are doing the same thing. They care about the soil. and they care about the nutrient density and even the bricks, the tasty, the sweetness.
Mm-hmm. And this brings us to your company, Azoti. So you use the term win-win-win, which is a term I also like to use because it implies that not only is there a win for the parties involved, but there's a greater good involved. And in an article in Metropreneur just this past April, you talked about the amount of food waste that is actually happening in the world. Can you tell us how the farmers, the chefs, the consumers having access to each other through Azoti, how that is creating this net effect of minimizing this food waste?
So there's the 40% of all food produced in the United States goes to waste. And when you break down that 40% into farmers, distributors, food processors, grocery stores, yep. and then you, in general, it depends on the product, but it's 25% at the farm is wasted, 25% at these distributors, 25% at the stores, and then even 25% at your plate. So what Azoti is doing is we sort of tackle the first three there, and whether it's a grocery store or a restaurant or a food service cafeteria, it doesn't matter. And what we found is that the way it works today, you have a situation where these distributors are asked to do way too much. So you're a chef and you need next day delivery because you don't know how much people are going to eat each day. Well, you need next day delivery of whatever product. That means that these distributors have to warehouse product. When they warehouse product that's highly perishable, that means it's going to go to waste very quickly if it's not sent to the chef, right? So these distributors across the country, and we're talking vertically integrated groups whose names I won't mention, but monsters, are experiencing at a distributor 15 to 25% food waste. So imagine you run a business. One of every four things that you buy goes to the food bank or doesn't get sold. Then you have these poor farmers who, what we say, they plant and pray. Very few of them have contracts except the largest. The midsize and small guys are sort of out there on their own.
Absolutely.
So what we've done with the internet, and it's this, by the way, this model is working in every industry. This industry just has not done it. They haven't changed in 80 years. And guess why they're changing now? It's because of you and all the people listening, the consumer.
Right.
The consumer says, I want to know what goes into my mouth, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. God forbid we know what goes into our mouths, right?
Yes.
I want to know the labor. I want to know everything about the supply chain, right? And however far you want to take it. So what we've done is we created this little platform that allows the farmers to talk with the chefs. And then in the off season, they can plan how much to grow, what to grow. And it turns out the chefs don't know as much as the farmers do about what could be grown. Then we plug it into the distributor. And we automate this relationship for the distributor. So it's a win for the distributor because now they get the chefs off their back about getting hyper-local product. And it's a win for the farmer because now they can plant with confidence, right? They grow for a market. And then what we do, the just-in-time piece, and this is sort of this came from the automotive space. Toyota was doing this, you know, three decades ago, is since there's no haggling anymore in this world, because we all agree in the off-season how much the price is going to be. Now, the farmer just comes into the Azoti system 1 week or maybe actually 3 days before their harvest is due for what, like strawberries are hot right now.
Mm-hmm.
They type in, I'm going to have 200 cases of strawberries. They click a button and then everybody in the Azoti network, right, that's related to that distributor, who that distributor goes to, receives an email and says, time to order your strawberries and everything else. They place the orders. The orders go back to the farm. The farmer then picks, drops it off the distributor. It's there for 24 hours and out the door.
Beautiful.
Just in time.
Beautiful.
And it's incremental so that the distributor, we're not taking over the distributor's entire operations because who wants some internet jerk coming in there saying, hey, we're going to do everything new. No, we have a business model that shows that if we can get 25% of their orders using this process, they can increase their net profits by up to 50%, thus meaning cost savings for you as a consumer or the restaurants and everyone else.
That's great. Mm-hmm. And so, from the same article, Azoti is poised to access some new markets, talking about access. Which are some of those new markets for our podcasters who are not from Central Ohio?
So we're going to Boston, Philly, Detroit, San Antonio, Austin, West Texas, which I've been to now three times, Lubbock and Amarillo. How you doing? And then we have California, which is very hot on this, and Denver as well. And then we're also talking to national brands like Albertsons, Target, Fresh Time Farmers Market, and some other independent grocers, right? So they're all adopting this technology. And then our job is to, as we like to say, end farm to fable with an F. because it's not really happening to the degree that the press says it is.
I like it. So since its inception in 2011, Azotea has implemented a myriad of supply chain solutions and programs that make local food more accessible to a number of audiences. So it's as much about introducing local food to as many people as possible as it is about supplying resources for small farms. As a mother to kids myself, I really enjoyed seeing Azotea pop up at our school because cafeteria food hasn't changed much since I was a kid going to PS 119 in Brooklyn in the 70s. Why is that, that hasn't changed in all these years? And what is Azotea doing to change that?
Yeah, I mean, it just goes back to that distributor. This industry is very siloed. The chef only cares about how many people they're ordering, and they just yell. Like, they literally do. I mean,
there's a chef culture.
And it's not just the chef, mm-hmm. right? If you look at, say, a hotel, and something changes, and everything comes down on the chef, the executive chef, and generally they have to hire. They don't have $1 million to hire sous chefs and all their helpers. So these are people, you know, not making as much money. You don't have to have a college degree to be in the food space. So there's a general lack of respect coming from the very top, even from consumers.
Gotcha.
Food can come anywhere. So we're just like, well, make it happen, chef. Then the chef, in turn, so then they take it out in the distributor and make it very difficult on these distributors. And then the distributors, when they have to work with the farmers, well, if they have to work with the big guy's in charge, so he tells the distributor what to do. So you have a very siloed space that doesn't work together, has very little understanding of each other's problems, going back to the empathy. And the distributor then has to play the old game of buy low from the farmer, sell high to the chef, which means that your chef at the school is only going to see what that distributor can give him. What has happened now is that these chefs have gone straight to the farm, and sometimes the farmers will start dropping it off, right, directly to the schools.
Right.
Well, that has a limit of maybe 3 schools max before the farmers aren't marketing logistics operations. Right? That's what distributors do. So again, what Azotea does is we knock down these walls, we unsilo, if that's even a word, this industry,
it
and just say,
now.
Let's collaborate.
Yeah.
Let's understand each other.
So you've also accessed places of employment, even food banks. One of the things we talk about with Access is having the boldness to basically go there. How did you go there in terms of making your access to these entities that are historically slow to change in general? How did you make them open to your vision? Because that's what Azotea is really about, is your vision of helping people gain access to fresh food.
Well, it's not my vision, right? I'm just responding to you, the consumer. The consumer says, I want to do something. And I just happen to have implemented these across other industries. And then being a foodie and understanding supply chain, I was like, wait a second, this could work here. But without the consumer pushing it, this industry would not change.
Gotcha.
So keep up the pressure.
Okay, I'll keep doing it. So Dave, you're also an avid traveler, as evidenced by your Save It Private Ryan story. And earlier in You Inc., we discussed how space adventuring in general can help us expand our minds to access more of it and also the possibilities of existence. So not everyone has the ability to travel the world, but you did. And according to your bio, you've traveled to Europe, East Asia, Central America, Australia, and even you lived in New Zealand for some time. Mm-hmm. For those who want to do the same, for example, first, how do you gain access to the idea that a person can go there, to go to these places? And then what does a person gain in terms of accesses to their minds from having gone there?
So, I mean, the first thing is you're not special, and we all have fears, and people have gone to New Zealand. People have hiked Mount Everest. Like, people have done these things. And I think the other thing that keeps people from doing it, if there's family and kids involved, that's a different situation. But if you really want to do it, you can still do that. Just takes a little bit of planning. And it also does. Money's the other big one. Oh, well, you need, you know, $100,000. There is so much. If you're not comfortable with couch surfing, which is pretty extreme for some, there are hostels. Mm-hmm. There are super cheap hotels. Now with Airbnb, mm-hmm. When I was doing it in 2002 and 2003, my little odyssey, that was where I had to book and the internet was sketchy.
Yeah.
Right. There were no blogs even. Blogs are even new, right?
Right.
So, you know, you really had to rely on relationships and being able to talk to people. Mm-hmm. Now these roads are well traveled. Google it.
You do have access to a large body of water, literally, mm-hmm. in your backyard.
Yep.
We've known each other for like 15 years.
Yep.
So I know you have solid opinions on things. What do you think is the future of access to water in general?
Yeah, I think that is an area that, let's assume Azotea gets moving. I want to apply a similar model into the water space. I think we, not so much from a climate change perspective, but more from just not enough water.
Mm-hmm.
And also the way that we possess water, with governments having access to it, and then those governments get taken over by, I like to call them crony capitalists, right? It's very easy for a multinational corporation to buy a politician and to help them gain the next election. You win the next election, and then they can gain some access to water rights, or worse, to environmental situations where they're allowed to pollute more than if me or you were to own it,
right?
We would be saying, hey, mister. And so there are methods that don't involve government, that involve insurance companies, that involve risk, that involve voluntary exchange, that I'd like to bring into the conversation so that we can avoid things like what happened in Toledo last year with the, was it the algae bloom? And, you know, there's many causes to it, but one of the is, we know, is the runoff from
the
big farms, right? Yeah. The nitrates from the big farms. And what degree, I don't know, and, you know, who knows what else. Regardless, there are ways to stop that outside of, government.
I had a feeling that you'd be on that. So, Dave, you and I just celebrated birthdays. Do you think putting another year on the calendar gives you access to life's finer things?
No, because I'm still an entrepreneur grinding out Shark Tank style, right, my living, begging for money. But what it has done for me, now that 40 has been broken, remember when you were 23 and
I
how
do.
Old somebody who was 32 you thought they were?
Yeah.
Now I could see 20-year spans, right? You see things more broadly and with greater perspective, which gives you gratitude. And also to know that 40 can still be strong.
Yes. Yes, definitely.
But come 50, 60, the body starts going.
I don't know about that.
I'm
going for
wrong.
120. I'm going to try. I'm going to try. Okay, Dave, give me access to your thoughts. You describe yourself as a voluntarist, and I haven't heard that term before, but I like it. And you say, and I quote, "It's not left versus right, but big versus small, centralized versus decentralized, and controlled versus free." What do you mean by that? Yeah.
So a voluntarist, there's a whole political philosophy around this. Some might call it libertarianism, classical liberal, but it basically grounds itself in a couple principles. One is if you centralize power, or power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. I mean, you can go
sure
throughout
does.
History. I don't care who you are.
I would probably get corrupted too. It's almost impossible.
Look what even Gandhi, if you look at how he sort of ran his show over
Mother
there.
Mother Teresa, same thing.
Bingo. Mm-hmm. All right. So we need to understand that. And when you centralize power with nuclear weapons and a printing press that, I mean, Rhea, imagine if you called me up and you said, Dave, I got a problem. And I press a button, boom, your bank account got filled up instantaneously with trillions of dollars. That's going to affect the way that you look at human beings. And so this philosophy, and it's been proven, is to decentralize power down to the cities, down to the as close to the individual as possible. And then, this is the hard part, is we have to tolerate each other, right? We have to understand that we're going to have differences and that we shouldn't use force to get your way.
Negotiate instead.
Negotiate, voluntarily exchange, agree. If we're going to disagree, then we will have this third party judge and we will follow whatever that person. There are ways to do this. And right now we have gone way to the opposite. And I think it's just, I think there's a lack of confidence. There's a lot of reasons behind it.
Right. How could someone request to be a part of a Zodi if they want to be part of that network?
If somebody wants to be a part of a Zodi, you can just go to azodi.com and submit your information, and you can see if we're going to be in your area.
You said you're a voluntarist, and I want to say thank you for volunteering, for coming onto the program. It was nice to have you.
Awesome, Maria. Thank you.
Okay, good luck.
Another turning point, a fork stuck in the road. Time grabs you by the wrist, directs you where to go. So make the best of this test and don't ask why. It's not a question, but a lesson learned in time. It's something unpredictable, but in the end is right. I hope you had the time of your life.
And now, a word from our person on the street.
So, Melissa, what are your thoughts on access?
Access, I think, especially this time of the season with it being summertime, it's pretty exciting. I mean, living here in Columbus, I think the access that we have as community members really allows us to be able to, you know, check out new restaurants, check out all the summer events that Columbus has to offer. But I think it gives us each the creativity to really kind of make and mold not only our days during the week and what we choose, but also the weekends. And it's just a really exciting time to be able to have that access to go to a pop-up shop that's in Old Worthington, like I did yesterday with Gemma Shop, or be able to check out the arts festival. It's a very fun, alive time, and I think it's just exciting to be able to have that access at your fingertips.
So do you have access to a pool this summer?
I do have access to a pool, along with my 50 SPF that I always wear. So
maybe you can invite us over sometime.
I would love that.
Okay, thank you very much.
And that's our show for today, folks. Thanks so much for joining me. I'm Maria Greif, and you've been listening to U Inc. on 90.5 WCBE.